sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean. It's the LAPD theme. Up against the car, did you hear what I said? Hands in the air or I'll smash your head. You better get on the ground or you'll wind up dead. You're gonna be sorry you ever spent coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean. It's the LAPD theme. Now you can bet your bottom dollar on the donuts I've eaten that your black butt is gonna get a beating. So go ahead, sue, if you think we're mistreating, and we'll take it up at the next Klan meeting. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean. It's the LAPD theme. Up against the car, did you hear what I said? Hands in the air or I'll smash your head. You better get on the ground or you'll wind up dead. You're gonna be sorry you ever sped. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean. It's the LAPD theme. Your step, you criminal slime, cause we're on the prowl, getting tough on crime. Get your cameras ready, get your lights online, cause we're all pumped up for prime time. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, we get mean. So all you junkies better come clean. It's the LAPD theme. Coffee and donuts, sugar and caffeine. If we don't get it, get mean. So all you junkies better come clean. It's the LAPD theme. It's the LAPD theme. It's the LAPD theme.
And that was Mark Levy, the LAPD theme. That was back in, I first heard that at the at a protest in San Francisco around the Rodney King beating. We have, however, going to have the Anita Henry beating today. In the studio with us is medical marijuana and, I should say, anti-drug war activist, community activist, Anita Henry. Hi, Anita.
Good morning, Robert.
And it's always great to have you on. Boy, I sound like one of these cheesy vanilla hosts on the mainstream radio. But it is. It's really good to have you because you kick a little butt. And you're also very discreet. You've been telling me some things off-air that I'm not going to repeat because it would be impolitic to do so. But you have a lot of strong feelings. You've been looking at the media. Anything you want to start out with yourself? I want to apologize to listeners. I had thought we were going to be half an hour late because another programmer needed the time to do an overseas interview. But she was able to, or actually had to, arrange that interview for an even earlier time for her. And so we're now back at our normal time at 9:30. I hope that some folks did not lose the opportunity to hear this fine show or the first half hour of it because of that. But we are hopefully going to be talking to Andrea Tischler today, local kind bud, compassion flower in activist who's been fighting, as have you, to get some decent guidelines. We have the kind of cheesy, very restrictive 420, the law, I guess SB 420 that was passed by the state legislature, which doesn't give half enough. And then there's the Sonoma guidelines, which are better, but perhaps not as good as they should
be. Well, there are several counties through the state that have their own guidelines, but Santa Cruz County doesn't have any guideline right now.
Mm-hmm. And that leaves it in the hands of our dear friend Sheriff Mark Tracy.
And the Board of Supervisors and the District Attorney and whoever else politically gets involved. And I think it's an important issue. I think they need to come up with guidelines, but I think more importantly than the guidelines, they need to come up with some way for most folk to just access cannabis. It's few and far between people that get into the co-ops that operate in town, and it's just hard for people to access it. So there's a lot of grandstanding going on. There's a lot of politics going on. But what it basically comes down to is the individual, because that's who we're really working for, you know, and trying to get the help to, is individuals who don't have the power to stand together with other groups and claim to be in a co-op. And we need access in the county, and that's what I'm pushing for. And I'm anxiously waiting to see what's going to happen with this talk on guidelines that's coming up.
Yeah, I understand both from talking with you and from talking with Andrea that not everybody is being called to the table on these issues. It's kind of a, you know, the corrals as usual of WHAM, Women and Men's Medical, let me get that correct. What's the proper, what does WHAM stand for?
WHAM is the Women's and Men's Medical Marijuana Alliance, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, they're a group that, of course, has received a lot of publicity through, some of it through unjustified harassment by the federal government, some of it because of their own good work, and then some of it because it looks like insider connections to me, and I've been very critical of the corrals on this station for not standing up for the rights of people in Santa Cruz to get medical marijuana in traditional ways, where since the early 90s there were clubs operating where one could go to buy it. You didn't have to become a member of a highly limited collective, as the WHAM collective is, less than 300 people and over 3,000 people in the county looking for medical marijuana. Now there's only them, and I guess people like yourself who can, on a very limited basis, have access.
Well, I haven't been involved at all in any talks about guidelines, any talks at all with the Board of Supervisors, as far as I know.
You've been a provider.
I've been a provider for almost 8 years now.
But you're not a big time. You don't provide for hundreds of thousands.
No.
It's very small. The club's the one on Walnut Street. The club on...
you mean the club that was on Maple.
I'm sorry, on Maple Street, the club that was on...
Seabright.
On Seabright, where Kate Wells was involved. These were essentially shut down because the city council under Rotkin and Fitzmaurice passed very restrictive zoning laws, and new clubs have been discouraged from opening, and Rotkin has, in spite of statements last November at the, Schwartz puff-along with Arnie Schwarzenegger deal, which I attended as a... observer, where he claimed he wanted to see, the laws around medical marijuana had to be, you know, reformed locally, not just at a national or state level. When approached at city council, he stood up and said, I made no commitment to do anything, but I will consider any proposal. This is his endless cop-out. He's used it repeatedly.
Yeah, no, they do not want a club to function in this county. They haven't wanted a club to function, and WHAM seems to be the only legitimate, if I can say that, operation in the county. They seem to turn the other way when it comes to WHAM. WHAM is doing very good work, but again, they are a collective. The corrals do own a mountain, and they're able to provide with the help and labor of the people who are in their co-op.
But only for a very small number of people.
Only for a small number of people. And again, it's not free. They do have to give some kind of contribution. And I have several people that I speak to who are in WHAM. I know several people who have left WHAM out of their frustration of either not getting quality medicine or just being pressured, you know, to continue to keep giving. They need more money. But the public face is it's free. It's a co-op. We're all working happily together. I wish them all the best. I want to see them succeed. Very happy to hear the sheriff has returned their medicine to them that was confiscated from their garden 18 months ago. But again, my interest is in the individual and access, and that's something that WHAM doesn't provide. I've tried to provide it for the last seven and a half years. It hasn't been easy. As you know, Robert, I've been home invaded and I've been burglarized. And the only way to really prevent something like that, if the county really does want to do something for the citizens, is to allow a place to operate. And they've virtually made it impossible for one to open and operate. I know I've tried to do it, and they just don't want one. So people have to go either to Hayward or up to Oakland or up to San Francisco or just risk going to the street and being arrested. And I'm just tired of it. I want something to happen, and I don't see anything happen. And my frustration also lies in the fact that I'm not included in this very exclusive politicking that's been going on about guidelines or about who can operate or about who can provide, who's going to go to the county and sign up and get their picture and their card taken after they turn over $35 when we're still waiting on the state ID card system to come down, which is going to be voted on later this year. I mean, everything is a mess, to tell you the truth. And I think they've just thrown everything up in the air, and they're going to see where it falls.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Later this morning, a public defender, Anthony Robinson, has agreed to come into the studio and talk to us about the drug war and what's going on in the local courts. That always interests me. I'm interested in knowing if Bob Lee and the prosecution is fulfilling his sort of indications, I don't want to call them commitments, but, you know, his suggestions that he would be laying off the drug war. I suspect he is not, and I want to find out what's going on with that. When I asked him some hard questions about it 6 months ago, he claimed his computers had not yet changed over, and, you know, there's some sort of computer change. And I heard this tale from ex-Chief Belcher, which was his excuse for not dealing with racial profiling and other things of that sort at the time. But, you know, it can be a legitimate excuse.
Well, you know, Robert, I met with Bob Lee shortly after he came into office, and I asked him, not only did I ask him, I presented him with copies of other counties' guidelines. I believe I gave him four different counties' guidelines. And I asked him, what about guidelines in our county? And his response to me is he was waiting for the state guideline to come down, that he didn't like the disparity between the number of plants, the canopy area, and he wanted to see one consistent guideline through the state, and then Santa Cruz County would establish the same guideline as the state. But again, we're waiting for the ID cards also. So
I don't like that. I don't like that standard either. I mean, it has a kind of a nice uniform. Let's all get together. Let's be, has clarity.
Well, it's kind of like, let's just sit on our ass and wait and see what happens instead of being taking the lead.
Right, and if we were not to take the lead, as we did in 1992-93, when, you know, we were the first county in the state, as I remember, maybe we weren't, maybe we were the second county, but we passed a proposition, what was it called?
I wasn't actually involved in that. I didn't get involved in the movement until 95.
We declared medical marijuana to be decriminalized in Santa Cruz County, or at least I believe it was something to that effect. And while, of course, it didn't overrule state law, it set the stage for Proposition 215 statewide. And I guess numerous other counties may have followed up on that, but certainly a medical marijuana club, the one on Maple Street that you mentioned, was established and served 5 to 10 times as many people as Valerie Correll and Mike Correll's Wham.
Right. Unfortunately, the personal issues and politicking that went on within the club, they self-destructed because that can't be duplicated.
They went on for quite a while. And there were new clubs opened up as well. Again, there are going to be problems. And marijuana is such a lucrative area and also such a desperate area that there are going to be difficulties that show up. In fact, I wanted to ask you, I know we talked about this on the show in the past. You've been up in Oakland and Richmond checking out their situation. There was some controversy of what's called Oaksterdam, the street where there are numerous clubs all in the same area, somewhat like Amsterdam, which has decriminalized medical marijuana. By the way, the guidelines we're talking about, folks, have to do with the number of plants and the amount of growing space and the amount of processed marijuana that you are allowed to have as a medical marijuana either provider or user. Is that right?
That's correct. What they're doing in Oakland right now, and you are correct, Oakland kind of got tagged with the name Oaksterdam because there was just a series of small little mom-and-pop clubs opening up in Oakland, whether they be a coffee shop where you could go and have your latte and then go downstairs and view the products and purchase what you wanted, or just, you know, an ordinary club where you would go in, show your identification, and get to choose what kind of products they had. But the city council met several times about this, and right now they're getting ready to propose an initiative to tax and regulate cannabis up in Oakland. And let me read you this little thing I have out of the Normal, that's the National Organization for Reform of Marijuana Laws newsletter. An initiative calling for the regulation and taxation of cannabis for adult use in Oakland has been launched by a group known as the Oakland Civil Liberties Alliance. If approved, the measure would direct the city to tax and regulate cannabis for adult use as soon as possible under state law and make adult private use of cannabis the lowest enforcement priority immediately. The proposed Oakland Cannabis Regulation and Revenue Ordinance would not actually legalize cannabis in Oakland. I'm not talking about medical use now. We're just talking about general use of cannabis. This proposed ordinance would not actually legalize cannabis in Oakland, since it's impossible to do under current state law. However, it would put the city officially on record as favoring a tax and regulate scheme. So organizers up there are very excited about this. But back to the point you were making about the medical dispensaries, because I've got something here about that also. The Oakland City Council adopted a path-breaking ordinance to license and regulate the medical cannabis dispensaries up there.
That was some years ago, right?
No, they just did it this past couple of months, within the last 2 months.
Because I remember there was a famous case last summer where a man was convicted in the federal court because he wouldn't allow the medical necessity defense, and one of his defenses was he had been authorized by the City of Oakland to actually get marijuana.
Well, that also happened to Ed Rosenthal, who
That's
said he had
else.
Been licensed to provide them with clones.
Right, so that authorization happened before, and this is in addition to that?
Well, this is actually just directly for the cannabis dispensaries, of which there are probably 12 to 14 of them up in Oakland right now.
So Rosenthal was authorized before, and this is a broader authorization for the dispensaries.
Right, this is specifically for the dispensaries. The ordinance was passed in response to complaints to get some of the clubs out of there. They're going to revisit it again in 6 months. But supporters up there have been turning out in droves. Patient advocates oppose a regulation that's been sponsored by one of the city council members up there. They don't want people going out to the streets to buy it. They don't want people sitting in their cars smoking it. The problem is, to tell you the truth, Robert, they don't want people to smoke marijuana. Even up in Oakland, they're talking about they don't want them smoking in the clubs. They don't want them smoking in the parks. They don't want them smoking in the streets. I think they want people to just start using this inhaler they're going to be coming out with and pushing on people, either inhalers, patches, or back to Marinol.
I actually used one of those inhalers the other day.
Did you really?
Yes.
I haven't seen one of those yet.
It was at a party, and it was kind of interesting. It's expensive. I think it's $120 or something.
See, now, who can afford this?
Yeah.
Who can afford this? But, you know, there are still abuses, Robert. Even though 215 passed and everything seems as everything is working smoothly, it's still off to a rocky start, and there are still problems throughout the state. There are delays in implementing the statewide identification system. There's confusion over guidelines. There are still continuing complaints of wrongful arrests. For example, and this is through the state. I'm not just talking about Santa Cruz, because I don't know very much about what's going on in the county right now. I haven't been involved in anything, and nor have I chosen to get myself involved in anything. But I do stay in touch with the Multiple Sclerosis Patients Union. That's a nationwide organization. I'm in touch with people up in Kern County, in Los Banos, in Hayward, Oakland, Humboldt, Mendocino. And there are problems going around. In Kern County, I know somebody who was arrested. He was documented. He had some marijuana in the toolbox, in the trunk of his car. He was stopped in a traffic stop. But the CHP officers told him that they were under orders to confiscate all marijuana, regardless of 215. So it's being implemented arbitrarily.
What county was this?
That's in Kern County.
Which is
that's down south, I think, somewhere.
Yeah,
somewhere down that way. Now, I know in El Dorado County, they have just organized a collective that's very similar to WAM. Because there's a new provision in SB 420 that recently passed that recognizes the rights of patients to associate collectively and cooperatively to cultivate medical marijuana. Because I don't think many individuals are up for the task of growing, can afford to grow, or have the health needed to sustain one to produce good medicine. So again, my interest is in access and having a club open up or seeing collectives form. Because I don't think most individuals, again, are going to be growing and are interested in a 600-foot canopy. This is for people that own property and live out in the country somewhere, and you know, can provide for themselves and others if they're able to. But what about the people who can't afford to? The people who are truly disabled, who are living on SSI, and have to have cannabis, you know, to either help them with their pain, to sleep, with their spasms, with their glaucoma. With their, you know, I don't have to go on and on. But one thing I want to say is I don't think people have to be dying or on death's doorstep to have access to cannabis. You know, it's a healing, therapeutic herb. I think more people need to come out and admit that they do use it. There's a lot of closet smokers in this county, a lot of professional, good-looking, clean, healthy, wealthy people who indulge, who know the problems associated with alcohol and know the benefits of smoking cannabis. So I just say right on to the Board of Supervisors. Let them kick out some guidelines. And more importantly, as far as I'm concerned, let's get a club opened, a co-op opened, whatever they want to name it. But let's provide access to people where they can get some good, organic, mold-free cannabis at an affordable price.
Right. And again, as I mentioned before, I'm hoping to have an update both from Andrea, who apparently has been working. She has news about from Supervisor Wormout, who she met with last week, about what the indicated situation is going to be. She's going to be talking about that later today, hopefully, maybe even sooner. I'm trying to get her to call in while you're on the air, Anita, because I think it's productive.
See, this is what's bothersome to me, Robert. Everything is so fragmented that the corrals can meet with the board. Andrea can speak with the board, but why isn't there a collective meeting? They know who's operating in the county. They know who the activists are in the county. But for some reason, they don't reach out to each other. It's a very exclusive, cold, self-serving, in my opinion, movement that's going on.
Yeah.
People are self-motivated and self-interested.
People get, you know, I think they feel they have a niche, they have a private inn with a person in power, and so they use that, and they don't want to jeopardize that by bringing in voices that might be more critical.
Well, I think people work better and have more power when they work together, and I don't see the harm in three or four of the most vocal activists going to meet with the board when they're deciding on guidelines or having these meetings. I feel it's very, to tell you the truth, unethical. I don't like the idea of the corrals meeting with the board talking about guidelines when they're not including somebody like MedX that they know has been operating for 7 or 8 years in the county.
And the other groups as well.
Yeah,
you're listening to Anita Henry, who's the MedX mistress, so to speak. And we have a phone call coming in. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM and 101.1 FM. Hi, you're on the air with Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. I can just really barely hear you.
How about now?
Not much better.
How about now?
Okay, a little better.
Maybe you're a bad reception, because I think we're audible at this end, but go ahead.
I was just wondering, I've forgotten your guest name. I really appreciate
Anita
her.
Henry.
Anita Henry, okay.
Uh-huh.
I really appreciate her, what she's doing, and everything. I think, you know, the illegality is what keeps everybody, you know, doing their own thing and being kind of selfish, because, you know, it's a dangerous and can be very costly if things don't work out. You know, I've had the police, you know, been called on me. They came and looked at my garden. Everything was up and up to snuff and law and everything, and they left. But it still created some major problems in the family and such like that they don't still know if it's legal or not, and I still say it was. Obviously, the district attorney didn't press charges, but you know, that was a few years ago, and I've gotten away with. There's another question that I actually want to actually ask the guest, and that's that I understand that now it seems like there's a new Supreme Court, and I'm not sure if it was Ninth District or you know.
That's the Ninth Circuit you're talking about.
Okay, boy, I can just barely hear you two. But anyway, is there a decision now where they will not go after the doctors that give you recommendations now?
Actually, there was a decision that was recently made by the Ninth Circuit Court up in San Francisco. That's the state Supreme Court. And they said they would not go after doctors. But to tell you something, it doesn't protect patients. So it does free doctors up to discuss cannabis use with their clients, but you still don't see doctors coming out and writing recommendations. I know my own doctor, where I go, they are a federally funded operation, and I have a very hard time getting my documentation every year because they're federally funded. They don't care what the state says.
Yeah, that's the way the VA works.
Well, what brought the sheriff to your house initially?
Well, actually, it was some nasty family stuff. It was my wife's children brought the sheriff's, I mean, brought the police eradication unit, you know, to my house. But they were very nice. There was I think he's a sergeant now, Azua, who led the team. I looked out my window and I saw like seven of the biggest police you've ever seen, you know, all looking over the fence to see if they could see anything, and they couldn't. And I invited him in because I just wanted to say, well, you know, I got all this stuff. I think it's, you know,
no,
come on
no,
in.
Don't invite
said,
in the police.
Pardon?
Never invite in the police. Talk to them outside.
No, I wanted to know, you know, from my curiosity. And as far as I knew, I jumped through all the rings, and it was all cool. And they were very nice about the whole situation.
And so they should be.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I know that all police officers don't have the same mentality nor, compassion that Mr. Azua, or Officer Azua did. But
well, they take their lead from the top. So whatever is going on at the top in law enforcement filters down to the troops out here on the street. But I think we're very fortunate in Santa Cruz County. I really do. I don't think we have it as hard. I think this is a very tolerant county. Problem is, it's I think a lot of decisions are made arbitrarily and selectively, and I'm a real believer in equality and equity for everybody. This is why we need some kind of standardized guidelines. So even if the sheriff comes to your house and looks at everything and says, yep, everything is kosher, what are they basing that on? I mean, that's an arbitrary decision. How many plants you had, how big they were, you know, how did they decide that?
Right. Well, at the time, I think, you know, there was kind of a consensus, and I don't think there is even a consensus now, but back then there was a consensus of less than 10 plants, you know, and that's, you know, what I had.
Right. Well, that's a very small number of plants.
No amount dried, you know. So, yeah, I've got a small providership.
Caller, let me ask you. Did Anita answer your question?
Yes, she did. I was going to find out. So my doctor, I have another doctor that, you know, isn't involved in the movement or anything. And he said, you know, he thinks it's silly, and he would give me a recommendation, but he doesn't have time to go to court. And that, you know, that's really the truth on something so silly.
He doesn't have to go to court to give you a recommendation. All he has to do is write you a letter.
Yeah, see, doctors are just in fear.
He doesn't have time to get dragged into court if they decide to question something, right?
Well, I mean, I don't think I don't ever recall a doctor ever having been subpoenaed to court, except, of course, it's possible that if he's giving out recommendations and that offends prosecutors, he may get called on the carpet like Todd Miller.
Willy nilly, or you don't know.
Wait a minute.
This guy's going to.
Caller.
Hello, I barely hear you, Robert.
Yeah, I know. It's your radio reception. I think we're coming out okay. I'm not sure why you
can't. I'm on my radio. I'm listening through the phone.
No, maybe it's your phone reception because you're coming out strong and clear on the signal. I'm monitoring your signal, and so am I.
When you're like trying to interrupt, I can't understand.
I understand. Go ahead.
Go ahead now.
Okay. You know, I had the same problem with the doctor I went to, and I was chastising him. I told him, you know, he said, oh, he had all these, oh, I don't want to be, I don't want to have my license revoked, yak, yak, yak. And while it's true that a small number of doctors have been harassed by the medical board, Todd McAree being one of them, and I was reading this last week in the Anderson Valley Advertiser, an interesting article if you ever get a chance to read it. He's been fighting for the right to essentially, he was recommending medical marijuana when it was completely illegal.
Doctor is that?
Todd McAree from Berkeley.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's famous. And
he's
being dragged before the board, a medical board up there. And they're coming out with an indicated decision, which is partially good, partially bad. And I was reading about it. But I don't think that actually doctors generally face that kind of risk. There's a lot of fear. But I think that this court decision that Anita mentions gave the doctors some leeway. That was a decision some years ago, I'm thinking, that the federal courts ruled that you can't stop a doctor from recommending medical marijuana. I mean, nobody can give a prescription for it because it's technically illegal, but you can give a letter of recommendation.
I think actually what the feds had a problem with is when they took a look at Micaria's records, who was a fine doctor. I think he had written maybe 15,000 prescriptions for people, and they were just questioning him. How could he be doing follow-up and really looking after these patients' health? So I do believe he was federally indicted. I don't know what happened, what the resolution of that was.
He wasn't indicted. He was taken before the state medical board, as far as I know. And he's getting some it's not quite a minor slap on the wrist. It's been covered rather extensively, as I've mentioned in the Anderson Valley Advertiser. Doug, have you got more questions, or shall I open up the lines?
No, go ahead and open up. I can't hear you good enough. Before you go,
yes. Do you have any information? I'm sorry for this bad phone connection. You have reported that Lieutenant Habee was pounding on your van door, the ex-police lieutenant, at 3 in the morning, and you're a disabled person, your wife works, and you are homeless in the sense you don't have the fixed two-bedroom home that we all want, or some of us want. Is that continuing? Are you still being harassed?
We're actually been able to avoid it because of the early hours that we actually get up in the morning. And like I said, you know, we were already up when he comes by anyway. So now we're just able to adjust our schedule and move to where we don't have to, you know, cross paths with him. I understand that they're still doing it. They go up and down Delaware, which they're considering some sort of corridor of some sort. With the loudspeaker at like 2-3 in the morning, and this is a regular police, not a parking police officer.
Yeah, and that's only going to get worse as the summer gets closer.
And as the parking permit program expands.
Goes into effect, right.
Yeah. Thank you for calling in, Doug.
Okay. Well, thank you all for the show.
Thank you, Doug.
Bye-bye. And again, we're at 96.3 FM and 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org, streaming on the net. I'm here with Anita Henry. I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we have another caller. In case you want to call in after this, 427-3772 is the call-in number. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert and Anita. This is Andre at the Compassion Flower Inn.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, glad you could tune in.
Been listening a little bit to, we just served our guests, and Becky called and said that you were talking about it a little earlier. I thought we were going to talk about 12 o'clock.
We were, but
I have to get out of here at 11:30, so Robert said, why don't you just come on in at 9:30?
Oh, yeah. Cool.
But I'm so glad you're calling in.
And I'm so glad that you're a co-host over there today. It's really nice to hear your voice and again, Nita.
Well, I love to be invited, and it seems to be one of the few times you and I get to speak.
Well, you should. Hey, you know where I live, and I know where you live. Yeah, that's right. We just live very close to each other, too, so...
You can invite us all over for a party.
Well, yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
summer,
I think it's about
coming.
Time for that. Of course, I'd like to tell you about the 420 party that we're going to have for our fourth anniversary.
Unbelievable. Cool. 4 years.
Yeah.
When's that happening?
Well,
April 20th. Well, 420, of course. April 20th.
Yeah, that's Hitler's birthday, you know.
Hey,
that's also my friend George's birthday.
We don't celebrate that, but
we
do celebrate... the 420 event that we know about,
right.
And that's going to start at 420. That's next month.
On
coming
420?
Up, in about 3 weeks.
Well, I've attended every one every year, including your grand opening, and it's always been a grand time.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lovely facility down there. Tell us what you know, Andrea, about what's going on with the board and the guidelines. Sure.
What's happening now? I talked with Mike Carell the other day.
Lucky you.
Things are moving very, very slowly, but they are moving ahead. And I spoke with Marty Wormhout. I went to her weekly meeting at the Union
Coffee
Shop. Mm-hmm. And I spoke with her last Monday. In fact, the constituents in her district should really go and lobby her right now for these guidelines, because this is going to be presented to the board. She's going to present it to the board in a month or so. And what that's going to probably be, what she's supporting, is the 3 pounds, 99 plants, and 100 square feet of growing area. That's the basically the thing that we, Theodora, and I think you support, and I've been supporting for the last 3 years. And we've been trying to get the board to pass those guidelines for that time, and now it looks as though that's going to happen.
Andrea, didn't you initially pass for sort of twice that amount of...
Well, yes. Yeah, so we had a couple meetings here last year with Mike Carell and a few other people. Anita, you were in attendance, Theodora, and Kate Wells. And we wanted to do the 6 pounds because that would pretty much take care of most patients' needs. You know, 3 pounds seems like an awful lot, but actually it's not when you think about the quantity that a person, some people need over the entire course of the year.
6 pounds, and you were looking for 200 square feet rather than 100, right?
That's right. That's right.
But Sheriff Tracy apparently had a different idea?
Yes, yes, that's right. Marty met with the sheriff, and so did Mike and Val. And even though the meeting with Mike and Val was very cordial because they are friends, it appears as though he's not going to support the 6 pounds.
That's unfortunate.
So what we're trying to do is write a resolution and present that to the board and really lobby them for the 6 pounds. And I think it's going to take, as Marty said, is that you want to get 3 votes, and you better go with 3 pounds because you're not going to get it with the 6 pounds. She doesn't believe that. That's her personal belief.
Well, I would be happy with the 3-pound limit, but more importantly than that, I'd still like to know. I don't believe most people that I know are in a position to grow 3 pounds or 6 pounds, nor do they have access to 200 or 100 square feet of canopy to grow. So the fact remains, we still do not have a geographic location where people can go and access their medicine.
Well, that's we were talking about establishing some guidelines for cannabis dispensaries. And that's a whole different story.
Well, how does one get included in on these talks, Andrea?
Well, you know, Anita, you know, the people who are the our stakeholders here have been kind of systematically excluded from the conversation. And we're kind of like on the outside. We find out everything from, you know, we're not in the back rooms striking
these,
the deals. You know?
I have to read these things in the Metro or in the High Times. I mean, I live right here in the damn county working on the issue, and I don't even know what's going on. And it's troublesome to me. You know, I'll give you an example. I do a lot of communication online. I have a laptop, whether it's to Haywood, Marin, Mendocino, all over the place. And people often include me or carbon copy me or blind carbon copy me mail. And, you know, I never get mail from Valerie Corral and Wham. But there's so much mail that she sends out and she receives, and I happen to get blind carbon copies of it. And I chuckle to myself in my little one-bedroom apartment, and I just kind of laugh. And it's kind of funny to me. My needs are getting met. My concern is for the patients I have, for the clients I can't take, how to help them, what to do for them.
Right, that's what it's all about, is how can we really expand
well,
this
when
to
we're
the...
putting the cart before the horse again and talking about, I mean, I know guidelines are important and I want to see guidelines exist, but again, people I know are working class or poor, and they don't have acreage. They don't have the expertise, the health, or the money needed to invest in doing a professional grow. So more power to those people that live in the country. They can throw the seeds in the ground. More power to the people that can grow indoors hydroponically and have hundreds and hundreds of dollars and hundreds of hours. But for those people who cannot, which is what this movement started about, is provision and providing access to people. Of course we want people to feel safe who have a small grow. But when you're talking about, you know, 6 pounds per patient or 3 pounds per patient, in my mind, that benefits a large co-op who has 300 patients that they provide for, and they want 6 pounds a patient. So 6 pounds times 300 patients, these co-ops will be growing massive amounts of cannabis. Do they expect the sheriff to protect their gardens and their grows?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this kind of thing I think that we're not really putting the cart before the horse. I think that you need to establish guidelines. And, of course, with SB 420, which did establish statewide guidelines and was passed and signed by the outgoing governor a few months ago, this is kind of like the first step, like this. Okay, what are the quantity amounts that an individual could grow? And right now it's for the state, it's very, very conservative. It's only 8 ounces and 6 plants, which takes care of, as far as I know, the patients that I know, none of them just, could be happy with, with just fulfilling their prescriptive needs with six plants. Because, most people, if you grow a 15-foot high plant, yes, then maybe you might be able to. But
Andrea, how can you even get this marijuana, I think, is what Anita is saying. I mean, it's nice if you have access to the WAM Collective, or if you're able to get up to Oakland, I guess, or if you're out on the streets, or if you've got enough money to pay somebody else to do it. But for a lot of people in Santa Cruz who used to use the Maple Street
Maple
Club.
Street Clinic, yeah.
And the other one on Soquel.
Seabright.
Seabright. Mm-hmm.
Get these streets right someday. There is no options. And I know you and I have often, and all three of us, in fact, and mm-hmm. probably Theodora, too, the Corrals have never deigned to reply to any of my concerns, but have talked about how, this was all foreclosed in the summer of 2000, the spring of 2000, when the Fitzmaurice-Rotkin restrictive zoning regulations hit the city. Kate Wells also agrees with this and has spoken out on it. But it's 2004. It's 4 years later. I mean, my question is, why don't the providers, you, Theodora, you, Anita, Kate Wells, all show up in mass at Rotkin's office and say, when the hell are you going to do something about this, and then hold a press conference? I mean, it might not go anywhere, but at least the issue would, Dan White might give you a half an inch of column. You never can tell.
Well, that's right. I think that we've been really very patient and polite about how we're going about this.
Diplomatic language
so
is
kind.
Diplomatic. It's making me gag here, Andrea. I got to tell you.
Yeah, I know this. I'm growing very, very impatient too. The wheels of government operate very, very slowly, and in this county, I think there's a lot of lip service that's being paid to medical marijuana, but I don't really see, our government officials stepping up and really saying, okay, now we're really going to do this. I can't tell you how many phone calls I get every week from people who are patients that have legitimate doctor's recommendations, and they are looking for their medicine here in the county, and there's no place really to get the medicine in the county. So we really need a dispensary. We have probably 3,000 patients that have doctor's recommendations, and the Corrals, the WAM organization, probably only helps about 200 of those.
Some of whom are disaffected and are giving rather strong and serious criticisms of not just the fact that this is an exclusionary group, but also have internal concerns about how the group is organized, violence inside the group, exploitation. This is the kind of stuff you don't hear about either, and that people don't have any alternatives. I mean, and they don't want to go public with it either. They talk to me about it privately, and they say, I don't want to be threatened. I don't want to be
right. I don't want to be kicked out. I need them.
I don't want to disappear into the woods. Even has been suggested. And by people who don't sound paranoid to me, but who have recited earlier cases. What's your assessment of what should the next step be here? I mean, it's all very well, and I commend you for, getting Wormhout to, succumb to the police state medical opinions of Mark Tracy and cut back on the guidelines, although expanding from the state, minimums. But what about the access? What's to be done about access?
Well, one thing that is happening is that we have a very famous ACLU, a lawyer that's ACLU lawyer that's coming to Santa Cruz. He's going to set up his practice here, and he's bringing eight other attorneys in here from the East Coast. And he was the attorney that argued the McCaffrey case, which, you know, before the Supreme Court, which, you know, argued, the federal government argued that a doctor does not have the right to confer with his patient about medical marijuana, and that was one. And so he is, his wife has got a professorship up at the university, and he was here yesterday, and we talked for a long while. They're moving in June. And I told him about this very thing that you're mentioning. Is we don't have any regulations, ordinance, which would allow medical marijuana dispensaries to happen here in Santa Cruz.
And that's what we need, and we need more activism. And what I would like to see is the 200 or 300 patients in WAM be more active on the issue. But they've become complacent, and they're dependent, and they're comfortable. So that's 200 less voices we have speaking out for access for all.
And maybe the wonderful Chris Crown, who's been babbling about running for city council again and sending these screeds in the Good Times and the Sentinel about numerous issues, some of which aren't half bad, frankly, could actually talk about, you know, serving more than the 7 or 13 people that he grabbed and dragooned the national press to come to town to, you know, to look at, I guess, 2 years ago. I mean, this is an issue that nobody wants to touch. And even when I talk about it on the air, I find it extraordinarily difficult even to get you two to get your asses over to Santa Cruz City Council members and make public statements. You will complain about it. You will talk about it in private. You will meet occasionally when Valerie Correll holds an event. But, you know, I'm lambasting you publicly because you guys... You women are the key figures here. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, we're all overloaded, but what are you going to do?
Avon,
well,
calling.
You know, it's true. You've got a very good point there, is that I just don't feel as though I'm included in any of this. I think that I'm kind of the... I think that's very true. I mean, they see the WAM organization as being the exclusive representative of the cannabis co-ops. They're the ones. And,
well, that's because you have quotes in the Metro from Valerie Correll saying, like, where is this quote here? WAM is a club in which you literally have to be dying to get in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on now. We know that cannabis is therapeutic and healing, and one does not have to be on death's doorbed or doorstep to want to use cannabis. There are plenty of documented patients who suffer from pain, from cannabis, from glaucoma, from A to Z. I don't have to tell you, Andrea. And one does not have to be dying to want and need access to a therapeutic healing herb.
Well, certainly not. And I know many of the members of WAM have been members of WAM for the last, 8-9 years, and they're still alive and kicking. I see them all over the place. So it's true that there are many people who are sick and dying, cancer and AIDS patients that are like part of WAM, and they get first priority, and they should be able to get their medicine.
We're talking with Andrea Tischler of the Compassion Flower Inn, Anita Henry of MedX. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop Spears Broadside Sun. I would encourage my producer, who may be listening to this show, to give a call to the Corrals and invite them to tune in and call in or to email in if you're having trouble getting on the phone line. It's because we haven't got but one phone line. rnorse2@hotmail.com, R-N-O-R-S-E number 2@hotmail.com is number to call in. And perhaps we can get some indication that the Corrals will break their, 10-year silence, or at least it's been a 5-year silence, trying to get this issue, 4-year silence since the spring of 2000, what to do to actually democratize and make accessible medical marijuana to people who need it, not to mention to decriminalize marijuana for the rest of us who don't want to be risking our liberty, our life, our limb, every time we light up a joint. So, what about it? Is it possible? I guess, I mean, you folks are having some important concerns, and I always want to, you know, mobilize you to do this or do that. Um, I I would invite people to call in, by the way, after Andrea is finished, and tell us about your own experiences with WAM or with the city around medical marijuana, and would you be willing to support? Would you come to a press conference? Would you come to a meeting in front of the city council offices saying, come out, Mike Rotkin, wherever you are? And I single him out because he was on the city council, as was Fitzmaurice at the time this was passed. He is the oldest city council member in terms of the number of years of service, and he's been there the longest. He was elected in 1979, and he has these pretentious liberal credentials, which really we have to call him on. I know the two of you also, of course, have operations to run. You don't want to run afoul of the police and the city power structures, and that's certainly true. How confrontational, first of all, do you think it's productive to be or necessary to be, and how much are you willing to be? I'll ask both of you that question.
Well, I prefer not to be confrontational, but I really don't know how our city leaders can just sit by knowing what's going on up in Oakland, knowing what's going on up in Hayward, knowing what's going on all around the state, and sit by and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's troublesome to me. I mean, why don't we just take our head out of the sand and be a leader? This is a sophisticated, university, intellectual town. We have very bright, caring, thoughtful people here. I don't know what it's going to take. My goal is to see a dispensary. That's what I would like to see. And my frustration is that I, like you, Andrea, feel left out. I haven't been included in any of the political talks. I've been out in the open. I'm not in the closet. I've been out to the DA, the sheriff, and the police. They know what's going on, but they choose not to acknowledge it.
Andrea?
Well, I feel as though I've been left out also, Anita, and if there was any information that I had that would have assisted moving this agenda forward, I would certainly share that with you and we would have meetings. The fact of the matter is that the last meeting we had with Mike over the guidelines with everybody present, you were present also at that meeting, and that was like over 6 months ago.
Even longer.
And
it might have been a year ago.
We had two meetings, that last meeting was a long, long time ago, and then I get a phone call from Mike saying, geez, I'm really sorry, Andrea, but we had to, Marty Wormhout wanted a proposal of what the guidelines should look like, and she needed that right away, and so we went ahead and did that without having a meeting of your group.
Yep.
And I said, well, geez, I don't think our group is going to really like that very, very much because, you know, we represent a larger number of people, you know, countywide than even the WAM organization. I mean, I don't know if we really represent all those people, but certainly...
Andrea, we represent many, many, many good people. And I think the problem with the corrals is, you know, every time I open the High Times, I just opened up the new High Times Grow America issue. There's a big story written by Mike Corral all about their raid and their garden. I open up the Metro. There's a story in the Metro about the corrals and the good work they do and them getting their money back, how the corrals are commending the county's new ID system. It's completely anonymous, costs $35. Who has the $35? Why is it beneficial? There's still no state ID card system, which is really all the state says they are going to acknowledge. Why are people feeling complacent and safe with this? Why is WAM an organization you have to be dying to get into? Why is Valerie brown-nosing up to the sheriff, the DA, and the police in this Metro article I read was really disturbing to me, how she's downplayed what the sheriff department did at her WAM garden, calling it a big misunderstanding. I think Valerie and Mike are getting what they need and what they want, and they're going to leave it at that, and they're not looking back at the rest of us. I don't know what you and I can actually do about it because now they are known nationally. They've been, and I don't have any problem with that. My problem is those that are left behind.
You know, the question to me here is, I hear both of you complaining you're left out, you're left behind, and indeed, not just you, but the thousands of people who need medical marijuana are left behind. But are you two actually going to wait until Wormhout, Tracy, the Corrales, the national media invite you, the city council invites you into a meeting? It's never going to happen.
No, they will not be invited.
You have to form your own meeting, set it up, and call every interested medical marijuana person in the county that's not being served and say, come to this meeting. And even if the feds come, well, then the damn feds come. Everybody comes. And you say, this is what we want, and then you decide what you're going to do, whether you're going to be confrontational, whether you're going to be diplomatic, whether you're going to hire these attorneys that come into town. But, I mean, it seems to me that you have to decide whether you have the time, the energy, and in this particular situation, the inclination to do this. You know, this is my constant rap. I've done this. I've been on your case for years on this issue.
I know.
And I can't get you to hold a meeting with the city council. I can't get you to call Mike Rotkin, for God's sake, on these issues. I've repeatedly asked both of you to call Rotkin, and he doesn't take me seriously when I raise this issue at city council, but he would take seriously calls from you, Kate Wells, the three of you, particularly if you're head of a group, demanding action on this issue. Mm-hmm. So really, it's in your hands.
It's in our ballpark. We have to really make the next move. That's absolutely true. Now, nobody can object to the 6 pounds and the 200 square feet of a growing area and 99 plants. And that's what the Corrales are right now arguing for. And so we want to, you know, like tag on to them and say, okay, if you think you can get this thing through, go for it, because that's going to be a really big forward a step when it comes to freeing up the plant and making and diffusing the whole thing about how many plants, as a previous caller said, you know, there's so much myth about, like, how many plants are allowed, but everybody mentions something under 10, you know.
Well, there's no way you can produce anything with under 10 plants. I mean, allowing for insect infestation or mold, I mean, you just cannot do it with 10
plants.
But what
I mean, Anita, there's just nobody really knows what is the really true amount. And, yes, right now, at this point, it's kind of discretionary. The sheriff decides whether or not, you know, this is too much and this is too little and so forth, which supposedly is, you know, SB 420, which calls for 6 plants. Now the sheriff can say, okay, 7 plants is too much. We're going to prosecute you for, you know, growing too much. And so that's why I think the Corrales and, you know, a lot of people are motivated to do something now, because SB 420 forces us to do something.
Well, around the issue, for those of you who have growing acreage, and you have some of that yourself, right, Andrea? You have some growing acreage, theoretically, somewhere, maybe have some access to it. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that's... I think we need full disclosure as to what's going on here. And I think that it's good. I want to see more people grow more. I want to see more people, you know, do stuff. And I also want to see... poor people get access to this. And
exactly.
You know, it's not, and the guidelines, frankly, are not, although while important for people, you know, for established, you know, groups that already have some pull to get somewhere, and I'm glad it happened. The guidelines are going to happen anyway. If the Corrales are backing this, it's the golden, you know, it's the golden charm. So it seems to me that you should set up yourself as an independent lobbying group. Don't let them do their thing. They will do their thing. I mean, but it's more important that what you do, your voices have to be heard, and they're not going to be heard except as little yeses or minor reservations on the side and the councils of power until you form your own powerful, you know, your own independent group.
Well, as long as dispensaries are viewed as profiting from people's pain and suffering, they're not going to allow a dispensary, because that is the image that's been created. And I think in part to WHAM, by Valerie oft-time saying, you know, it's free, we don't believe in profiteering, people go off the street and get ripped off. I think that's the problem. There is a myth that dispensaries are profiteers and are making millions of dollars. That's not true. There is a lot of cost involved to growing and providing good medicine. And
well, neither of the dispensaries that I was involved in Santa Cruz over the last 12 years, Anita, were profitable. The Maple Street one was profitable, and the Seabright didn't make any money either, even though they did charge, you know, what was the going rate for an eighth of product.
By the way, we're going to be looking in on the issue of Immler and Todd McCormick in the weeks ahead. That was the controversy listeners should know regarding a man who went to jail for 4 years for marijuana, trying to distribute marijuana medically, and Scott Immler, who was involved with that with the club and has also been charged with snitching.
Well, I believe McCormick, wasn't he arrested for growing like 10,000 plants?
He and Peter Nichols?
McWilliams.
McWilliams.
Yeah. Right, who you know, who essentially died because he couldn't get his medication because he was in jail.
Right.
It's a serious story. I just mentioned this kind of as a quick blurb. I'm hoping that we'll have something on that soon. Let me kind of wind this up. Have Andrea, any more you want to discuss? And by the way, you're not far away from the studio, and you're welcome to come in and join Anita here if you. I know it's a busy morning for you, but in case you want to talk more directly, I want to let some other people get on the line in case other people are trying to call in.
Well, I think probably all that I want to say is that I see this as happening kind of like in a sequence. I see guidelines, countywide guidelines, first being passed in the next couple months by the Board of Supervisors, whatever that may be, 3 pounds or 6 pounds, whatever. I'm going to be happy with something more than what the state is. And then the second thing I see is like let's get a dispensary in Santa Cruz. That's the real priority, is we need to serve these patients locally and not have them go up to Oakland and San Francisco to get their medicine. And so I think we could lobby the city council at that point. And Mike Rockin, I agree with you, is probably the key person that would be forwarding this idea.
Maybe we can get you to call in today, Andrea, and any other listeners to call in to 420-5020, 420-5020. That's the voicemail for the entire city council. It'll also put you into Rotkin's voicemail, 420-5020, mm-hmm. and say time to decriminalize medical marijuana in the city in terms of dispensaries, as you promised to do, Rotkin, back in November when you spoke about it publicly. And maybe I can get you to do it, Anita. It's a possibility.
It's always a possibility.
It's always a possibility.
Well, I remember Mike Rotkin talking at the Light Up with Arnie. It was on the eve of the inauguration of Schwarzenegger.
Right.
And he spoke publicly at that. I don't know, were you at that?
I was, and I recorded it, and I played what he said on the air. He made a commitment to...
Yeah.
It sounded like a pretty strong commitment, too.
And it was a very strong commitment. I spoke with him personally before his talk and about that. And he's, I think, definitely supportive of like getting rezoning the areas that medical cannabis could be sold. For example, in Santa Cruz, in our downtown area, that is off limits. Because it's not part of the zoning area. So that needs to be liberalized, and also some... enabling legislation has to be passed to make it so that dispensaries feel safe in opening up. Nobody wants to open up if they think that the police or the feds are going to come, you know, and barge down the door.
Right.
And so I think that we're in a little safer environment than we were a couple years ago when WHAM was busted. I think these Supreme Court decisions really have set the feds back substantially, and I think we're moving ahead with what the voters of California really want, and that is we want medical marijuana for people who have doctor's recommendations.
Maybe you and Anita can have a meeting with Mike Rotkin this week and report back next week and let the listeners know how it's going.
Let's do that, Anita.
Andrea, you and I will speak as we are on the same page.
Okay. Come on over after you leave the, and we'll talk about our strategy here.
Thank you, darling.
And, okay.
All right.
Love you guys.
I don't
care
about any illegal substances being smoked, okay?
Okay. Well, have a good afternoon, Andrea.
All right. You too.
Thanks,
all
Andrea.
Right. Bye-bye.
That was Andrea Tischler of the Compassion Flower Inn.
So good to hear from her.
We are listening to Anita Henry and Robert Norris on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Sorry this has been so long, but I think it had an important dialogue has happened here, and hopefully...
some movement will take place.
These two will take Mike Rotkin by the scruff of the neck and talk to him in the fashion to which he is accustomed. We now have a caller on the line. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Yes, my name's George, and I've been a medical marijuana patient for about 3 years now.
Uh-huh.
And I have a particular concern about my doctor's prescription. Uh-huh. It seems like it's only good for 1 year at a time, and I do have a permanent disability.
What is your disability?
Pardon me?
What's your disability?
I have a major back injury, and...
marijuana helps you with that.
Absolutely, yes.
pain.
It has actually gotten me off several prescription drugs.
Yeah, that's a common story that we hear. You know, you bring up a good point, George, because this is something that I have to deal with quite often. I don't know where the idea came from that patients need to get a new doctor's recommendation every year, because it certainly wasn't in the original copy of Proposition 215. I believe that wasn't talked about until the federal government made busts on the 7 cannabis clubs in 1997, I believe it was. And then all of a sudden, clubs were requiring you to get cards and a doctor's letter every year. So I don't know where that stands right now, but I know that if you go down to the county of Santa Cruz and sign up to get a county ID card, pay $35, and show them a copy of your doctor's letter, they will give you a county-issued ID card that's good for 3 years.
Ah.
So
okay,
there's
but the point is, it is a confusing issue, and are there any particular specific guidelines for the doctors?
No, there are no guidelines at all for the doctors, and it's at the doctor's own discretion. And I know before Clinton had made the threat that the feds would come down on doctors who prescribed or recommended cannabis, doctors were writing pretty freely, because I do believe it is a medical issue. You know, it's not a law enforcement issue, and your doctor knows best what's going to provide you the most relief.
Well, my concern was, let's say the medical prescription lapses over that year and I keep the original letter with proof of my permanent disability. Would I have to renew every year? It's rather expensive and I'm on a fixed income.
What kind of expense does it cost you to get this letter?
Well, I go up to Oakland just because of easy access.
And no access down
here. Yeah, you can't find a doctor down
here. No access down here. My doctor refused to do it just because he didn't want to get involved, I thought.
Yeah.
And it was just an easy alternative to go up. But it's very expensive. It's $150 a year.
Now, that's a lot of money. But, George, I've actually heard it costing up to $300 to get a doctor to write a letter. And I think these are some of the doctors that perhaps the feds were interested in, doctors that were seeing thousands of patients and just writing letters for them and making a quick $150, $200.
Your question is, what can you do? Does it have to be done every year? How can you proceed?
Circumvent that, or is there a law that says if you do have a permanent injury you can just get one letter good for life?
Well, even WAM requires their clients to get letters every year, and it doesn't matter if you're a quadriplegic or a paraplegic or an amputee or a cancer survivor. They also want a letter every year.
Did they get that from somewhere, Anita? Is there some sort of...
This just appeared one day, Robert. I'm telling you, it didn't exist in the beginning. In the beginning, it was only a doctor's recommendation. And then after the federal government made the busts on the 7 cannabis clubs, Oakland, L.A., Santa Cruz being one of them,
mm-hmm.
Within a very short time, they were saying, well, you need to get a doctor's letter every year.
So they're trying to, why every year? Why not every 6 months or every 2 years? Who knows? Nobody's set those things.
Money.
We don't know.
Yeah. Money. It has to do with money.
Well,
because
every 6 months is even more profitable.
But even every year, if you have a permanent disability, you're not going to get better. If you have chronic back pain from a back injury,
Right. It's
not getting better. If you're a paraplegic, you're not going to get up and start walking and, stop having spasms.
We know these people are faking. You're a faker, right, caller?
absolutely not. I have... I was retired from my job after many years with a permanent disability.
And you said that you stopped taking pharmaceuticals.
I didn't smoke marijuana on the job because I had a Class A license. As a result of that, I had gotten myself onto many pharmaceuticals for my injuries.
Which is not good for you at all.
Exactly. So now that I'm retired, I have weaned myself off of some of these heavy medications. And
so,
now I'm just concerned about my medical. It is a hassle and it's an expense.
And you must also feel a little, I don't know whether it's like guilt, or you must not have very good feelings about that, knowing that you can't go to your own doctor and just ask him for a medicine that you find relief from, that you kind of have to travel you know, through two or three different counties to pay a doctor an extraordinary amount of money to write you a letter for which you know you're entitled.
Yes, absolutely.
So that must give you some kind of internalized shame.
It does.
Would you be interested in, here's my organizing spirit again, if Anita and, you've been listening to the show?
Yes, I also want to say how I appreciate this on-the-air forum, because there is so many confusing issues.
Would you come to a meeting if Andrea and Anita threw it, supporting their attempt to change local marijuana laws and also clarify some of these concerns and problems that marijuana patients have that are not being dealt with by other organizations?
Absolutely. I am convinced just by weaning myself off the heavy drugs that this is the right thing, and I want to involve myself.
Let me ask you a question now that we have you on the air. Since the Board of Supervisors in the county is going to be passing guidelines soon, we hope, are you a person that's in a position to grow 100 square feet or 200 square feet?
No, I'm not, and I wish I was.
How about 10 square
feet? I live in a condominium.
He wishes he was.
Yeah, we do. Well, so also, are you a person who'd be willing to give a call to Vice Mayor Mike Rotkin and ask him to meet with medical marijuana people in order to change the law so that you can actually get access in Santa Cruz?
Yes, I will. And actually, I'm a friend of Anita's, and she will keep me posted.
Thank you so much, George.
And I do have to go right now, but I do appreciate this forum, and I'll be calling again.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
427-3772 is the number here at Free Radio, 427-3772 at 96.3 and 101.1 FM. You're here with, or I'm here, and you're there, but hopefully we're together with Anita Henry, and I'm Robert Norris. And we'll find out who you are. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello.
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 Hello. I'm just calling in reference to your rhetoric there, and I'm calling with my voice in it.
Sure.
It's interesting that everybody talks about getting together and doing something, and let's do it, and let's do it, but it's all rhetoric. No one wants to give up their anonymity and their safety because of anonymity, or they don't want to give up their position of power. Why do you think the corrals are so exclusive about their meetings and their dealings with law enforcement and politics and all? They're in the limelight. They're in the position of what they say is basically written in, kind of grandfather style.
Mm-hmm. Right. What troubles me is that when they speak, it kind of, you get the impression that they're speaking for the county, or that they're speaking
for themselves, and they know it.
Right. Well, they're speaking for themselves and their small select group, which I don't wish them any harm, but it is a very select group, and it doesn't address the issues of the masses of people. And I wonder how well they're even meeting the needs of their own population, because I've spoken to several people who are in WAM, as I said earlier in the show, who've either chosen to leave WAM because it was just too much pressure and bullshit, and I've spoke to other people who've told me they're tired of being pressured every week to give more money. I've spoken to other people who've told me they don't like the quality of what they're getting, that they can't even smoke it, it's not even medicine. So hopefully now I've heard that WAM has gotten their crop back, and we'll see whether they'll be distributing that. And there's also an article in the new... there's a new magazine that High Times puts out called The Best of High Times, Grow America. If people want to go out and get it, it's the April issue, and there is a story in there about WAM and their garden, and Mike Corral is quoted as saying that their garden is up and running again, and they should be in the full swing of things, so hopefully they'll get back to providing good medicine to people this summer.
Well, it's interesting that that information doesn't get out to members.
Yeah, I find that interesting also.
I'm going to remain anonymous as far as name, but I am a WAM member, and I know that information is very spotty as far as what gets out to the general membership. And in reference to, again, membership and who's getting it, that BS rhetoric about you literally got to be dying to get into WAM is just that, a bunch of crap. There are so many, I don't know a better word, cronies in that organization. It's not even funny. And these are people who don't need or would not, worsen or be ill affected because of lack of access to medical marijuana. I know that for a fact. And as a matter of fact, being a member, I have serious problems with, as you were talking about, quality of medicine, quantity of medicine. It's been a problem ever since that little raid that the DEA did back in a couple of years ago, and it's been a mess ever since. And the herb that they took was premature, so even if they do get it back, dried and cured though it may be, exactly what medicinal value it's going to be is questionable at best.
Well, they can always make tincture.
That's good. I like that. They can do what they can with it, yes, but it certainly doesn't seem to me like it's going to be medicinal quality for any general use.
Well, we'll hope that things get better, and for your own sake and safety, it's best you probably remain anonymous.
Although,
but
probably they know who you are if your voice is recognizable. Let me ask you this. Would you be willing at some point, anonymously or otherwise, to support an alternate organization? It could include WHAM people. I don't think WHAM should be excluded. But that
well, unfortunately, WHAM members are excluded by a court of a letter they signed saying that they will not affiliate with any other organization. They will not get
what?
Their herb from any other area or any other way or means.
Good
so.
Grief.
Robert, now I thought you knew that.
I didn't know that.
Well,
actually, a couple
now
of years,
you do, so.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I actually had a phone call from Valerie Corral asking me if I was serving any WHAM clients.
Oh, the blacklist, eh?
And if I was serving any WHAM clients, I had better let her know who they were, because if they had money to spend with me, they needed to be giving it to WHAM. So that's true.
Any chance, though, of maybe you can't join an organization, but you certainly could pressure Rotkin by calling him up and asking him to support broader, access to marijuana in the city by changing the zoning laws. How would WHAM, you and other WHAM members, would you be able to do that, or has Valerie Corral told you how to
no,
vote?
You,
to?
No, Robert, you're misunderstanding.
Yeah. Right.
What I think the caller is saying is when you join WHAM,
right,
you sign a contract that says you will not access cannabis from anywhere else
that.
Except WHAM.
But you also have to support their political positions.
You have to pledge allegiance.
No, but
yeah, there you go.
To the flag.
So in other words, if you called up Rotkin and said, I'd like to see an additional club opening up, you would probably be bounced from WHAM?
I don't know if necessarily bounced, but you would
you would not make them happy.
You would certainly be viewed in a
suspicious
less
light.
Favorable light. Yes.
Well, you're pretty unsavory. I can hear that already.
Well, I
think you probably taste pretty good.
It's actually an interesting situation because, as a WHAM member, while the organization has been frontiering to a degree, it's only in as far as it furthers the interest of WHAM and its founders. It's
we
always
like to call them the Corrals.
Way. All right, they're
Mike
the Corrals. And anyway, it's never going to be any different than that because power is one of those things that don't, how do you say it? It's highly
corrupts.
Addictive and it's not easily...
easily. You can't break the habit so easy.
Yeah, it's not easily released.
You know, I've also heard concerns about violence inside WHAM and...
The unfortunate truth, yes, there are some unspoken laws in and around surrounding WHAM, and you just don't ruffle the waters if you want to survive in WHAM.
I know. I heard an incident from a man who went public to city council, Bob Roberts, who spoke about being assaulted by Mike Corral. He didn't report it till several years later, but he was sufficiently concerned about it that he raised
well,
the issue.
He didn't report it till several years later, hoping that the water would calm and he would be able to continue on and benefit from being a member of WHAM. Well, that wasn't the case.
I also heard concerns that Wham is becoming kind of a cult, that there's a sort of a worship the high priestess phenomenon going on.
What are you going to do when you have somebody who's getting as much press as the Corrales, specifically Valerian, because she seems to do the most traveling and talking to people.
I don't just mean worship the high priestess, sort of, wow, let's give a lot of respect. I mean actual rituals and things of that sort.
Well, I wouldn't have any information into that, but I'll
well, being a man and all, it's probably naked women dancing.
I would like to see some naked women. How come people aren't worshiping
me? Now, see
me?
That? I'm uninformed, and I'm... No, I don't know about any rituals per se, but I know that there is definitely a ring of warriors or warrior goddesses there, have had, call it what you will, that are willing to defend to the death the Corrales.
Yeah, they're very self-protective of what they have because they do have a good thing. Problem is, we can't all be in it. So what are the rest of us going to do?
And why not open discussion on this issue? The Corrales have repeatedly refused to talk about this publicly.
Of course. That would preclude their exclusivity. That would start to chip away at their dais, the pedestal that they sit upon.
Well, you know, you don't need an artificial pedestal if you're doing good work. You don't need to have phony...
Well, there you go, and it's a matter of, are you doing good work, and is it really good work for the general population, or is it just good work because it sheds good light on you and you just love the press?
It's easy to get into that trap and to kind of confuse those two issues if you're you know, at the top of one of these organizations, I would imagine.
It's basking in the limelight. As far as other issues go, good luck in getting the dispensary going in this county.
Hey, and we hope that you give Rotkin a piece of your mind.
Hmm.
420-5020 for all you listeners out there who want to back up people who are in WHAM, people who are outside WHAM, but who want to have a number of options.
Thank you for calling, caller.
Thank you.
Thanks. And phone lines are open, 427-3772. We're waiting for Valerie Corral to give us a quick call to clarify these issues. Come on, Valerie, you can do it. We love you. You can stand up, and you've got some important things to say. And some questions are being raised here. 427-3772 is the phone number. Anita Henry, Robert Norris on Bathrop Spears Broadsides, 96.3 FM, 101.1 FM, and, of course, www.freakradio.org. Let's take a musical break here.
She did not like the movies. She was not fond of shows. She had no time for parties. She does not care who goes. All the same to that girl. It's just a game to that girl. She's the laundromat girl. Laundromat girl. She does not follow fashion. She does not care who knows. She is no common blossom. No, she is a summer. Need all that and all your diamonds. girl, laundromat girl, laundromat girl. She does not hear your footsteps. She does not meet your eyes. You cannot claim her interest, but you are mesmerized. I don't know why they say things. I don't know why they laugh. You have a lot.
Carol Denny singing a song that she wasn't supposed to sing. I was going to sing a more politically hep song, but that was a song that off of The Rich Will Never Be Poor, and it's called Laundromat Girl. So there you are. Carol Denny's a Berkeley singer and activist who kicks ass, sometimes kicks my ass, but that's another story. This is Free Radio, and I'm kind of the... The alternate host is taking a breather. We had hoped to have a kind of a special segment here with a little variety on the show, some special guests. But it looks like we're getting crowded for time. So what I'm going to do now, briefly, is to give everybody a little bit more of a breather. I'm going to, first of all, I note that there are no calls coming in. If you have any calls, do give a call, 427-3772. Free Radio is that's the number here, 427-3772. And if you have calls off air, let's say you want to talk about this issue but you don't want the entire world to hear about it, let's say you're maybe concerned about repercussions, you're afraid Mike Rodkin might, call you a liar at city council or possibly attempt to have you arrested. Both these things have happened to people at city council, but not, I'm not saying he's going to go out after you. But there are some concerns about Wham, for example, that some people want to air privately. There's a number off air, 423-4833. That's my line, the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. A lot of the time the show is about homeless and civil rights for the poor. In fact, that's really what this is about, too. We have a call, however, so. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Alan Brady, and
hey,
I heard that Mendocino County has the most liberal guidelines, and I was wondering what are the Mendocino guidelines? Just take it off the air. Thank you very much.
Sure. The question, Anita, is what are the Mendocino guidelines?
I don't have the guidelines with me, to tell you the truth, but I know the SB 420 guidelines. Let's see what I have here, the paperwork in front of me. It says local governments are authorized to enact higher but not lower limits than those in SB 420. Medical marijuana activists argue that SB 420 limits are too low for many patients. As an alternate, many advocates of the Sonoma guidelines, which allow up to 3 pounds of marijuana and 99 plants in a 100-square-foot area. Right now, what they're trying to do here in Santa Cruz is double that to 200 square feet, and I believe 6 pounds. I'm not sure what they are in Mendocino County. In Humboldt County, let's see what I have here. It says here that the district attorney up there, Paul Galagos, he came into office supporting Sonoma guidelines, but then he has been backpedaling after being attacked for being too soft on pot. He referred the limits to the Humboldt Board of Supervisors, who are evenly split on the issue and have now appointed a task force to study it. In Santa Cruz County, patient advocates are presenting the Board of Supervisors to override the SB 420 limits by adopting a more liberal version of the Sonoma guidelines, again allowing 200 square feet or 6 pounds. How does that relate to you? Are you in a position to grow your own? Do you have a canopy? Do you grow indoors or outdoors? Listener, are you there?
Actually, he's off the air, but we have another caller calling in, or perhaps he's calling back. He wanted to have you answer that question off the air. Hi there. You're on Free Radio.
Yes, I was looking for that number you were given for the county council.
For the city council? The city council, Vice Mayor Mike Rodkin's number, and I'll give it out again on the air. It is 420-420-5020, and there is a 24-hour voicemail line. You can either give a message to the entire city council, or you can kind of go into their little voice system, look for Mike Rodkin, and you'll get him.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd be real interested if any of the listeners out there are in a position to grow or are in a dilemma because they can't find access to cannabis. I would be interested in hearing what people out there have to say and what your experience has been.
So you can always call in here, 427-3772. I'm going to kind of run through a few other subjects while we're waiting for callers. We don't have to wait very long, apparently. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, I was calling in reference to the growing situation.
Uh-huh.
My name is Victor. I know Anita. She knows me.
Hello, Victor.
Hey. It's a difficult situation being a medical user and trying to procure your medicine is difficult. And if you're in a situation like I am, I'm a recipient of Blessed Housing Authority. That's how I'm able to survive in this county and maintain my residence.
But that's a federally funded program.
Bingo. And therein lies my main problem. If I do go about growing my own, I place in jeopardy my housing in this beautiful place, and I don't want to do that. And if I don't, then I'm stuck at the mercy of other people's prices, and that can be pretty steep. And I am one of those recipients of SSI. I'm on a limited income.
Well, you know, Victor, most of my clients are on a limited income, and several of them do have housing authority, and they live under the same fear that you do. I don't know if it's really stopped anybody from trying to grow or setting up a grow, but what I find from my own experience and the people that I know that do grow is that it's very time-consuming, very expensive, and it's not something that's easily done. It's something you have to be very patient, and you have to wait for it, but in the meantime, you need your medicine every day.
It's exceedingly expensive. The equipment for that is just buku bucks. You talk about hundreds of dollars. We're talking about thousands of dollars for your... Even for a real simple setup, you're talking about hundreds of dollars, and that's the simplest closet setup.
Right, and most people can't afford to even buy the grow.
There
equipment.
You go. Who's getting SSI at $600, $700, maybe $800 a month can afford a $200, $300, $400 outlay in 1 month? They wouldn't eat that month.
Or had the room actually to do the.
There you go. Had the room. Period.
Or could pay the PG&E bill every month.
Well, there
you go again. This is a bone of contention with me because even though the Board of Supervisors is working on this guideline, again, I have to say I think it's going to benefit the co-op that's in town more than anybody because when you're talking about a 6-pound per patient limit and you have 200... 200-